Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
The questions scientists still have about the universe far outnumber the answers, and that's the subject of a new book called We Have No Idea, A Guide to the Unknown Universe. It's by cartoonist Jorge Cham and physicist Daniel Whiteson. They break down what we do and don't know and why we don't know it with infographics, cartoons, and explanations of some very complex ideas. Joining us now is Daniel Whiteson, whose day job is being a professor of experimental particle physics at the University of California, Irvine, and a fellow at the American Physical Society. Daniel, welcome.
Hi, Jeremy. Thanks very much for having me on.
It's great to have you. And how much do we have no idea about?
Well, that's a great question. It turns out we live in a really exciting moment in physics because we know very well that we know very little about the universe. One way to quantify that is to think about how much stuff in the universe we understand. It turns out it's about 5%. So we're pretty ignorant when it comes to understanding what the universe is made out of.
Why focus on that 95% that we don't know about rather than just say we know 5%? That's pretty good.
Well, we certainly are spending a lot of time thinking about that 5%. Basically, all human history of physics and chemistry and biology has been focused on that 5%. But in this book, we focused on the other 95% and on the unknown questions because we wanted to remind people that science is more than just getting answers and explaining how things work. It's about asking questions. It's about touching that core human vein of curiosity, that desire to know how the universe works and the larger context of our lives.
So let's start with one of the things that you get into in this book. One of the things that we do now know at least a little bit about, and that is the Higgs boson. It was a major scientific breakthrough in 2012. They discovered it. What questions did that discovery answer?
Right. So the Higgs boson was theorized in the 50s or 60s and 70s to sort of answer a puzzle in the patterns we saw in particle physics. They didn't really make sense, and people thought, well, it would make a lot more sense if we had this one other particle. And so finding it answered those questions. It explains things like, why is the photon totally massless, the particle responsible for light, while other particles, like the W and the Z bosons, are really heavy? So it answers those questions, but it also opens a lot of other questions. For example, we know that the Higgs boson is the reason that other particles have mass, like the electron, or up quarks and down quarks and top quarks. But one thing we don't understand is why do some of these particles have a huge amount of mass and some of them have almost no mass? Finding the Higgs boson doesn't tell us anything about questions like that.
What about cosmic rays? You get into that in this as well. You say they're hitting the atmosphere every single day.
That's right. And this is one of my favorite mysteries about the universe because we have such a concrete clue. The Earth is being bombarded by particles from space all the time. That's what we call cosmic rays, just particles from space. The really interesting thing is that we have no idea what in the universe could be making them at the very highest energies. These particles that hit the Earth have energies that are incredible. They're much, much more energetic than any particle we can accelerate on Earth. But we don't know what's making them or who's making them.
And you say that we could actually detect them with an app on our cell phones and that if everyone used it, you could learn a lot more about cosmic rays.
That's right. Cosmic rays are hitting the Earth and they filter down to the surface. And one of the difficulties in understanding what's causing these and where they're coming from is just getting enough examples of them. They're kind of rare. It's like one per square kilometer per century. So you either need a lot of square kilometers or a lot of time. So we wrote an app, it's called CRAFIS, Cosmic Rays Found in Smartphones, that could turn your phone into a particle detector. And if enough people sign up for it, we kind of need a lot of phones, then we turn the existing network of smartphones into a massive global telescope that's looking out into space to see these things. And then potentially we could get a lot more candidates and understand something about this and maybe unravel some huge cosmic mystery.
If you're just joining us, we are speaking with Daniel Whiteson, whose new book is called We Have No Idea, A Guide to the Unknown Universe. And I have to ask you about one of the most interesting things to me from this book, which is about the speed of light, which is the fastest speed anything can travel, as far as we know, 300 million meters per second. Why is that? How sure are we that nothing could travel faster than that?
We're really pretty sure that nothing can travel through space faster than the speed of light. It's ingrained into our basic physics theories at this point, and if that were not true, we're pretty sure we would have seen it. So lots of experiments verify that. But the question is, why that speed? Why not twice that speed or a tenth of that speed? It makes a big difference to our perception of the universe. Things seem so far away because it would take thousands and thousands of years to get there. If the speed of light was much faster, interstellar travel would be much more possible. If the speed of light was much slower, things would seem even further away. And the interesting thing is that as far as we know, our theory of the universe, this is just a knob. If you're at the control panel of the universe and you're deciding which of these, what speed of light our universe should have, you could have dialed it up or down and you still get a totally functioning theory of the universe. We just don't know why this setting. Does it mean something? Is it totally random? We have no idea.
Is it constant? Has it always been 300 million meters per second?
As far as we can tell. And you might wonder, well, how could we tell? Well, the thing is that we can look backwards in time pretty easily when it comes to cosmology and astronomy, just by looking out into space where light is taking a long time to get to us, meaning the events we're looking at happened a long time ago. And so we can watch those things happen. As far as we can tell, those things follow the same laws of physics that things here on Earth follow and things in our neighborhood, which suggests that our understanding of physics works as well for the past, which suggests the speed of light was the same.
Another big question, how is time different from space?
Yeah, I wish I knew the answer to that question. It's fascinating, though, because in modern physics, it's really tempting to tie time and space together. We have this concept of space-time that Einstein invented, and it seems natural and beautiful and elegant to make time the fourth dimension of space. But time is different from space, right? For example, I can move around in space without much restriction, but I can't in time. I move only forward in time at the same speed no matter what, 1 second per second my whole life.
Right.
Those rules don't apply to space, and we don't understand it. There are some crazy theories about time. Some people think like, well, we have three dimensions of space. What if we have multiple dimensions of time? Or maybe at the end of the universe, time will reverse and go backwards. Or maybe at the Big Bang, time was created twice. One's going forwards and one's going backwards. These are honest to God, real theories of time that are discussed today by cosmologists and theorists.
Well, one thing that we do know a lot about at this point, comparatively anyway, is gravity. Are there still mysteries about gravity?
Absolutely. We have a great theory of gravity. It works really well, general relativity, and we can predict how planets move around each other and even understand things about like black holes. The thing is that we don't understand why gravity is so weak. And just as a simple experiment, imagine holding up a small household nail using a normal magnet. That little magnet is not very strong, but it can counteract the gravitational pull of the entire Earth, right? Which tells you how weak gravity is. Why is it so weak? We really don't know. The other thing we don't understand about gravity is that we have no quantum theory of it. Most of the forces like the electromagnetism and the weak nuclear force, these forces we understand in a quantum mechanical way. We think of them as like sending little particles back and forth. But gravity, as far as we know, we have no quantum mechanical understanding of it. Maybe there's a little graviton that particles send back and forth against each other when they feel gravity. But maybe not. Maybe it's not a quantum mechanical force. It's something totally different and weird.
If you had written this book just as a straight, you know, scientific book, do you think that it would have been possible for people who aren't, you know, steeped in science to understand it? Do you need these jokes, these cartoons, in order to make it work?
I think it's certainly possible to write a cartoon-free physics book that people can understand. There are a lot of good examples out there.
I think my high school physics book was cartoon-free, but I could be wrong. Maybe there were some cartoons in there.
But we wanted to do something different. We wanted to explore a new direction. And Jorge and I have been working together on these sort of cartoon explanations of physics for a few years. And so we thought it'd be fun to write a book about it in the same vein.
Well, but it seems that this gets to a bigger point in the scientific community, which is it's so important for people, and especially non-scientists, and you could also say politicians, to understand some of these principles of science, that just the communication of it is something that has to be focused on right now.
I agree, and I think it's an important task of scientists to communicate to the public what we're doing and why we're doing it. In the end, they are paying for it. So they should understand why they're spending their money on it. And it's our task to make sure that they appreciate it. And one of the goals of this book is not just to explain what we have learned, but to motivate future research. It's only when you think about the possibility of the things we could discover, the crazy, mind-blowing ideas that are out there, one of which could be real, what could be true, that people get excited about science and they want to support it. So we hope that by touching that desire for people to understand the universe, we can encourage people to support science.
So of all the things that we have no idea about in science, what's the biggest question you have?
Well, I decided to spend my professional career on the question of what is the universe made out of? If you take two rocks together and smash them together, you get smaller rocks. You keep doing that. How far can you go? Can you smash them forever and get smaller and smaller and smaller pieces of matter? Or is there a fundamental building block of the universe? And if there is, what does that mean? And so I spend my days doing research at the Large Hadron Collider to try to answer that question. What is the universe made out of? It's an ancient question, and it's pretty reasonable to want an answer to it, I think.
But you can't just figure that out just by smashing rocks together.
No, you need a big, expensive collider, unfortunately.
That's Daniel Whiteson, who is a professor of experimental particle physics at the University of California, Irvine, and a fellow at the American Physical Society. His book, along with author Jorge Cham, is called We Have No Idea, A Guide to the Unknown Universe. Daniel, thanks for joining us.
Thanks very much. That was a lot of fun.
And we've got an excerpt from the book at our website, hereandnow.org.